engineering support. So that's going to be pretty interesting. As you all know, I like to bring you real-world examples, things that very firsthand experientially I've been involved in, so that you can learn from the mistakes of others. All right, let's start with Adobe Acrobat 11. Is an excellent product. Unfortunately, it is now end of life. End of life and end of support means that Adobe will no longer be issuing security patches for that product. The implication for you as a user of that product is that if you have that installed on your computer and you continue to utilize it, you leave yourself open to being hacked through an unpatched vulnerability in a piece of software that currently resides on your computer. Therefore, you have a choice at hand here. One choice is uninstall it and then just install Adobe Reader instead. Or the other choice is look at doing an upgrade to Adobe Acrobat version 2018, or I'm sorry, I think it's 2017. I don't think they've released the 2018 product yet. There is a standard version of the product and a pro version of the product, so Adobe Acrobat 2017. Now, my personal experience, I've done a lot of testing with this, and I use Adobe Acrobat extensively. I mean, literally, there's not a day that goes by that I'm not using the product at least 5 times. I found that the standard product really just doesn't have the feature set that's needed for somebody who is actively using Adobe Acrobat. And really, if you're only an Adobe PDF kind of dabbler, like you only open files and maybe you do some basic, very, very basic comments, never any real edits or anything like that, then probably Adobe Reader is going to be fine for you. I've tested quite a lot of competing products on the market, whether they are PDF creation type of products or PDF editing products. And basically, the PDF editing products, the competing products on the market, are just unsatisfactory. They are not really a viable alternative to Adobe Acrobat Pro. And in terms of PDF creation, if the only thing you're trying to do is print to PDF, well, then go to cutepdf.com, download the GPL driver, and then install the cutepdf converter, and just print whatever you want to PDF. That's all fine and dandy. Adobe Reader will allow you to do some very minor comments, but it is not an editing tool. So what I find is people that have bookkeeping and accounting type of work as part of their business process, what they, you know, do as part of their job function, they need to have Acrobat Pro, because most receipts that you're downloading, even if you're scanning a paper receipt, these things that you need for your long-term business records, this is all PDF these days. So you need to have the ability to combine pages, to add comments, you know, all kinds of things. And no other product is sufficient other than Adobe Acrobat Pro. So the question really comes down to, if you need Acrobat, you need to upgrade. And if you don't need Acrobat 11, and since it's end of life, end of support, uninstall it and install Adobe Reader as an alternate. Okay. So we move on to the Krack wireless vulnerability, and that is spelled K-R-A-C-K. This is a very significant vulnerability that exists in WPA and WPA2 encrypted Wi-Fi traffic, and this is probably a problem that's going to exist for the next 20 years, and that is because people keep using old crud and then not maintaining it. And I ran into earlier this week even a wireless computer, a laptop, Windows 7 laptop that somebody was using, and it was a Lenovo. The Lenovo software update on that computer was broken. And their wireless NIC in that laptop just refused to connect to the wireless. Now, I looked at the driver date on it, and it was from 2009. And I go to the internet and I look for a new driver for this device, and there really isn't one. So, fundamentally, if you're using old stuff for which there is no driver update, you're going to have problems connecting to secure wireless. And if you want to force the wireless to have degraded security so that old, ancient, insecure, vulnerable devices are going to be able to attach to it, which of course leaves you wide open to security breaches. Well, yeah, that's your choice, not a good idea. Although I will tell you that the more quality wireless access points out there, assuming that they have been properly maintained by a qualified certified engineer, they are not even going to be, it's not even going to be allowable to connect insecure junk to those wireless access points at some point in time in the near future. In fact, there's a lot of wireless infrastructures now that have been fully patched to mitigate this crack wireless vulnerability. The majority of the patches became available by the wireless access point manufacturers around about the beginning of November 2017. So, if your wireless infrastructure is being maintained by a quality certified engineer who is interested in keeping your stuff up to date, and you have that sort of a relationship with them, because of course nobody does this, nobody takes on the management of your stuff for free. If you have that sort of relationship with somebody, then I hope that they have updated your things by now. And if you have internal staff who's supposed to be doing that, then that's a question you need to ask. Say, hey, have you updated our wireless infrastructure? Because all wireless infrastructures were vulnerable to the WPA2 crack vulnerability because it was actually a vulnerability in the WPA standard. It was not a manufacturer-specific vulnerability or CVE. So, what this crack vulnerability was really about is it was a collection of 10 known vulnerabilities, and these effectively made it easy for a bad guy to sniff and retrieve and intercept, effectively engage in a man-in-the-middle attack against all of that traffic being transmitted between the wireless device and the wireless access point. And by the way, this is one of the multitude of reasons that I have for choosing to minimize the usage of wireless. You have these let's have, wireless keyboards and wireless monitors and wireless mouse and, Bluetooth this and that and make everything wireless. Why not? It saves money. You don't have to run cabling. Well, it actually, the cabling only costs you the one time you implement it. Beyond that cabling's not going to cost you any money again for probably the next 20 years. And in 20 years, what you're going to do is decide whether or not that cabling is still meeting your needs. And if it is, great, leave it alone. And if not, well, then you're going to pull it out and replace it. So, in terms of total cost of ownership, physical cabling will always be your cheapest option in the long run. The time to use wireless is when a physical cabling scenario is just not possible. You've got a tablet and you want to be able to roam around with it. Okay, great. Or, well, I've got this mobile device that doesn't have any physical network card on it. Okay, then use wireless for that. But there's absolutely no good reason to take a wireless adapter and stick it in the back of a PC. As human beings, we really shouldn't be exposing ourselves to more electromagnetic frequency, more EMF radiation than what we're already exposed to. It's pretty ridiculous how much EMF the human body is exposed to on a regular basis, anyways. So, the crack vulnerability was a big deal, it'll probably continue to be a big deal. As part of this, I alluded to the fact that endpoints also need to be getting patched. So, are the drivers on your PCs getting updated? Is the firmware on the network adapters in your PCs getting updated? What about, your wireless laptops? What about the drivers on your mobile phones? What about the drivers on your tablets, right? What about all the drivers for all the wireless network cards out there and all the devices that you have? Those things need to be updated too. And in the meantime, in this interim time, some of the wireless manufacturers have, wireless access point manufacturers have implemented a feature in their APs that allows for the crack vulnerable clients, so those endpoints, to be blocked from connecting to the wireless. Now, I think that's a great idea because why would you allow an insecure, a vulnerable device to connect to your trusted network? Now, if you've got an exclusively dedicated wireless access point that's not used for anything other than just straight up guest traffic, well, then maybe you don't care. Personally, I do care. I don't want to be providing a guest wireless and then have that be the venue with which a device got compromised and hacked because I allowed man in the middle of traffic. So that's your judgment call to make. But fundamentally, if you don't have a relationship with a qualified, certified network engineer, network architect that stays on top of all this stuff, that knows what to do with it, that cares enough about you and your business in order to keep things updated, then how would you have ever even known that this was something that needed actioning? And then how would you know what the right action plan was to take with regards to it? And this is just a microcosm of stuff that literally happens 2-3 times a month at the at, you know at a minimum, sometimes more often than that. So you can't just, this is, technology is not a set it and forget it thing. It's not, I mean, even your automobile is not a set it and forget it thing. You have a maintenance schedule for your automobile. Of course, you have to have a maintenance schedule for everything else that you have. And if you're not prepared to have a maintenance schedule for it, then really I would just advise you to not procure anything then. Because anything that's not maintained, that is something that you have, is a point of vulnerability for you and is creating an unmanaged risk profile for you. All right. So we're going to move on to some real-world examples of what's been happening lately. So I see trends, of course, and patterns, and then I want to share those examples with you. So recently, I've been dealing with a lot of new organizations lately, and I can tell you that there's a theme song going on. Of course, the theme song is, their networks were not engineered, their backups were either non-existent or grossly insufficient. Usually, non-existent is what I find. And it goes on and on from there. But absolutely, irrefutably, 100% of the time, the thing that they've all got in common is that they're using some garbage endpoint security product that is just doing what I call security theater. Now, if you want to understand more about security theater, you don't have to look any further than the TSA themselves. So recently, it's been talked about in the news that the TSA has admitted that when they have their own people test whether their security filtering practices are effective at catching security threats, 80% of the time their processes fail. So, what that would suggest is that everything that the TSA is doing is security theater because 80% of the time it's not effective. So, if we take that concept and we apply it to the endpoint security market, okay, first, what is endpoint security? An endpoint is your phone, it's your mobile device, your tablet, your laptop, your desktop PC, or your server. So it's something that is not a piece of network equipment, basically, right? It's some other computer equipment, but it's not network equipment. It's not a printer. It's not a switch. It's not a wireless router, okay? So we have operating systems on these things, and we put endpoint protection agents on there. And this is the thing that you guys have historically called antivirus. I don't use that term anymore because antivirus is only 15% of the 100% pie equation that you need now. You know, if you think about it, it's like, okay, I need 100% of this functionality, but really antivirus is only maybe 15 to 20% of that functionality. So if you've purchased an antivirus product, you're missing out on the other 80% of functionality that you need in order to actually have effective endpoint protection. So what I see across the board when I walk into these places is that they're using products like AVG and ESET. Why? Well, because it's cheap. But interestingly enough, the acquisition cost of endpoint protection software has always been super cheap in comparison to getting hacked and getting viruses and then paying somebody to clean up that mess. So in one circumstance, I was working with a new client, had roughly about 12 PCs or so, go around, uninstall ESET from servers, PCs, put on the Trend Worry-Free business security services agent, and less than 24 hours later, Trend had reported back to me that it had found lots of viruses, it had cleaned and removed those viruses, and it reported in very specific detail what those viruses were and what the action it was that it had taken, what files it was that was infected, these sorts of things, what computer it occurred on, all of this information. Now, I say all of this because of two to three main reasons here with this. Number one, if you're buying and trying to utilize an endpoint protection client that is just ineffective, it's security theater. You might as well have just taken your money and lit it on fire. Now, beyond that, you're putting your own business data at risk as well as all of your customers' data at risk. And if you get hacked, do you think that your customers and clients are going to trust you with their data? Now, I'll grant you that a lot of people don't seem to care about things like that. But there's absolutely quality businesses that do care about that, and they have no desire to do business with a vendor who can't take care of their own stuff effectively, especially when it's something as simple as keeping a PC from getting a virus on it. Because really, in order to keep viruses off of computers these days, yeah, it's a pretty easy formula to follow. It really is. I mean, it's very, very formulaic, and you're not going to be getting viruses on PCs. So if you can't manage to take care of that in your own business, then that's really not a good sign. That does not suggest that your systems are being competently managed. So, you know, you don't want to be wasting money on something that is a garbage product, first off. You don't want to have employees that can't do their job because their computers are slow, acting weird, having issues. And you certainly don't want to be paying an IT technician to clean up that mess. I mean, whatever that differential price is in terms of having a decent product versus a garbage product, I guarantee you that differential price is going to be far exceeded by having to pay a consultant to do cleanup actions. And I have had to, in the last 3 weeks, do three separate circumstances of cleanup operations at three different locations. These are all, you know, new clients, and in every single case, their endpoint protection client, their ESET or AVG product, was 100% ineffective because there was viruses on a bunch of different endpoints that the ESET and AVG products never captured at all. Didn't detect it, didn't remove it. So it was pure security theater. And absolutely, I guarantee you that what the customers paid me to in terms of cleaning up things, computer systems that have viruses on it, grossly exceeded what the price differential was if they would have just from the very beginning purchased a quality product. Now, if you put yourself in their shoes saying, well, you know, you're not a security expert, right? So how on earth are you as a business owner or, an office manager, whatever, that business decision maker, how on earth are you supposed to know what's a good product and what's not? Well, you don't really. I really don't think you have a chance in heck of figuring that out. What you have to do is find that trusted security engineer, security architect, and then get their opinion. But even more than that, get a commitment from them that they're going to, in an ongoing manner, manage the configuration settings of that. And I'll tell you why that's crucial. If we look at Trend Micro, for probably the last 10 years, they have been the top security product manufacturer with regards to endpoint security. Now, this is not my opinion. There are multiple independent security evaluator labs that have generated that result. Okay, so the security community at large generally has that opinion. And then Symantec Corporate Antivirus comes in as number two. So Trend Micro is very innovative, and they are always putting energy into coming up with new functionality. That new functionality is dealing with mitigating, preventing, handling new types of threats. So they come up with this new functionality, and then they integrate that into their cloud-hosted platform. And you, as a subscriber, you benefit from, in an ongoing fashion, being able to have access to those settings. But security settings, 99% of the time, are not secure by default. Security product settings are available for hardening, right? You do not get a piece of software that is hardened by default. You do not get an appliance or a switch or a wireless access point or really anything. You don't get a PC that's pre-hardened. This is a device with software on it, firmware, settings that then can be configured by a competent engineer in order to deliver the outcome of a secure solution that you're looking for. So as this new functionality becomes available, you need to have that relationship with that engineer, that expert, who's going to have that commitment to proactively be testing these new settings, seeking to understand these new settings, how to best implement these, how to best utilize them in order to mitigate risks, and then proactively rolling out those new settings to your systems. So there's no such thing as buy it, install it, and don't do anything with it. That is a dead strategy, totally ineffective, and if you take an approach like that, you're not maintaining the value of the investment into the security solution that you've originally spent money on. And it's way less expensive to do incremental maintenance than it is to unwind a mess. Now, speaking of mess, I've recently been to a new location at where it's just a typical story that I run into. I've done over 200 network re-architecture projects, and as part of a network re-architecture project, it's really the whole kit and caboodle. Everything has to be fixed. The internet connection, domain DNS, typically website, email hosting, servers, backups, PCs, endpoint security, password management strategy. Really, of course, the entire network has to be re-architected, switches, security appliance, everything, right? Because if you're not addressing the whole cybersecurity kill chain, if you're not addressing defense in depth as a strategy, you're leaving your home PC or your business computer systems open to attack. So you have to have a patch management process in place, whether it's an automated solution or it's not, it's you still have to be doing something with it. Like I said, you can't just install and then walk away and say, we never need to maintain that. That's really a naive worldview. And I had a rather interesting conversation with a business owner recently who said, I don't want to maintain a server. And I said to him, then don't have a server. But then you have to realize that when you don't have a server, you're actually going to end up paying more in labor because everything has to be manually done because you have no central place to be able to push settings from. Furthermore, you have no way to engage in policy enforcement from a security perspective. You have no business continuity. People don't have a consistent user experience where they can log on from PC1 to PC2 and still be able to get their job done. What happens in a situation where their PC is it died? Something went wrong with it. You want them to be able to go over to another room, log into a temporary use PC, and really be able to get access to everything that they need in order to do their job. Well, if everything is a PC-centric view, and you have, let's say, 15 PCs, now you're talking about manually doing maintenance on 15 PCs. Instead of a model where you're doing maintenance on manually on the server, and you're using the server to facilitate the automation of the maintenance on the PCs. So without that server, you really can't automate maintenance. You can't automate 100% of maintenance 100% of the time under any circumstances, unless you have full automation tools, which tend to be rather expensive. So in the small to medium business market, you tend to not find the ability to do 100% automation all the time. But that server can really bend that cost profile to becoming something much more manageable. There's always an initial acquisition cost that is the capital expenditure of the server, its operating system software, backup and disaster recovery software, right? All of these components, licensing, implementation, labor. So there's going to be quite a chunk on the front end. But your IT costs now become manageable, sustainable, and your outcome is stable, functional, reliable computers that facilitate your staff to be able to do their job, and frankly, profitability increases because people aren't experiencing stupid outages that could have been prevented. I mean, literally, yesterday I spent several hours with a new person looking at their system and saying, none of these issues should even be existing. If your computer system had been maintained for all of this time, you wouldn't be experiencing any of these problems that are causing you to not be able to do your job. And at this point in time, that computer is more than 5 years old and it's out of warranty. So is it really a good idea to put more money into an old broken thing? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Well, and this is a really deep topic. And a lot of lessons to learn about what you find at the typical business that has not been maintaining their computer system. So I'll roll that into the next show. And as always, please send your comments and questions to me. I do enjoy them. And you can just use the comment feedback form at qualityplusconsulting.com.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW-Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students program, and Steve